The Phoenix Suns road trip continues on Friday night, but on today's episode of Locked On Suns, we go into the time machine looking back at the 2022 trade deadline and one almost deal that tells us a whole lot about where the Suns might be going in the future. Let's go.
Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons, and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you all for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Friday, another Suns game day in Minnesota tonight. Not previewing that game. We're just hoping for any good news, I think, on game days these days. But it's a good opportunity to go back into that time machine wherever you're finding us. Hit follow or subscribe if you like what you're hearing to get this show in your feed every single Monday through Friday, whether that's Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. We're here for you every day to get the most content you can about your favorite team. Today's show is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. More from them later in the show, but let's dive right into it. Again, we're rewinding. We're rewinding almost a year to the 2022 NBA trade deadline. And a report, much more than a rumor, pretty substantial reporting. Talked about it at the time. I actually have to start with an apology because I don't think this got enough attention, which is why I want to revisit it, but I had the wrong take, all right? And so it has to do with DeAndre Ayton, and it has to do with a guy who is going to be a Western Conference All-Star this year who is not DeAndre Ayton. You might know where I'm going already. I'm going to read this rumor. The article says rumor, which is why I keep calling it this, so let's just stick with it. It was from Zach Lowe in this one instance. He wrote in his, he always does like a trade deadline recap show. He always does a big breakdown right before the trade deadline, and he was on this. He called it that the Suns and Indiana Pacers had, quote, brief dialogue about a deal that would include DeAndre Ayton and Domantas Sabonis before Sabonis was ultimately traded to the Sacramento Kings. This is from a Bleacher Report article noting that Zach Lowe wrote, talks did not get far. And, quote, may have been mostly informal and broadly exploratory, aimed at the future rather than anything now, all right? But I know for a fact, after talking to a Pacers writer, the Pacers host on our network also, Tony East, I know he talked about on his show that this was real, all right? And not that I need Tony East to confirm what Zach Lowe is saying, but Lowe had it sort of after the deadline. I started to hear about it because Gambo was talking about it and Tony was talking about it from their local standpoints in Indiana and here in Phoenix. And the wrong take I had was that this would have been a bad trade, all right? That's just the long and short of it. I feel like I'm wrong about that. And obviously hindsight is 20/20. But the reason I said that at the time, I think the facts have changed. And so I think it's reasonable to have had that take at the time, I suppose, and now to feel differently, because the number one problem I had with it was that I felt like the Suns' entire defense was built around DeAndre Ayton's versatility, mobility, and size, athleticism, all that stuff, right? Well, this year, the defense has fallen off, right? What we thought was, if you plug Ayton in at center and you have good team defenders around him, maybe, you know, some great ones like Bridges, you're going to have a top 10 defense, right? Under Monty Williams, you just lock that in. That hasn't been the case this year. Not to say that I'm going to judge Ayton so harshly off of a season where he hasn't had great teammates most of the time. At least one major player has been out for the majority of the season, if not more, on every single game night. But effort, execution, all that stuff has really, really waned for him. And so that's part of why I wanted to bring this back up now. But I think it's fair to have said that at the time because the defense was there. He was finishing up the best season of his career, in my opinion. They were winning at an extremely high level. And despite the free agency, which is obviously what Zach Lowe was getting at when he said aimed at the future, we know the Pacers did eventually sign Ayton to an offer sheet. Maybe there was some conversation that would have been targeted at maybe an offseason sign-and-trade. If the Pacers wanted Ayton, the Suns might have gotten Sabonis back then. We know there never ended up being a sign-and-trade. The Suns matched, and so that all was wiped away. But the reason I wanted to bring this up, aside from noting that Ayton has been much worse this season, and the parts of his game that you felt like would have set him apart from a player like Sabonis have gone away, I also think that there's a pretty obvious lesson to be learned about James Jones in all of this, and we're only about 3.5 weeks now from the trade deadline this year. I don't know if there will be a massive trade that would have been at the size of this Ayton Sabonis thing. I don't know what the Suns will do, but what this tells me is all of you, maybe even me, a lot of fans who are frustrated with Jones not prioritizing offense enough, shot creation enough. Well, what does it tell you that things got far enough? Now, I understand that you probably assume this leaked from the Pacers side, right? The Suns don't tend to make a habit out of telling reporters what they're up to. But either way, we don't hear a lot about the Suns. This got to a far enough point that Zach Lowe heard about it and had it concretely enough to report it. Tony East, Gambo, on the local scale, had it as well. Tells me it was serious. And if it's serious, that tells me, well, maybe we should back off the accusations about not prioritizing offense and shot creation enough, right? Because that's about as polar opposite as you can get with a trade, right? I mean, sure, I guess you could go from Rudy Gobert to, like, I don't know, Nikola Vucevic or something. But for all intents and purposes, Ayton is, most of his value, I would say, comes on the defensive end, at least with this construction of how the Suns play and how their roster is built. And Sabonis' value is almost entirely on offense. Now, even Sabonis, look, we'll talk about it a little more in the next segment. He's not a pushover. The Suns aren't getting him now, by the way. He's having an all-star season, so it's a little bit of a moot point. But you would have been going from defense first to offense first. That's what this trade would have been. That's where James Jones' head was at when he was exploring it. Even if it was something that they pegged for the summer, and maybe you could throw this into the Kevin Durant bowl and say Jones should have pushed harder. The point is, he saw the writing on the wall that Ayton's fit here might not be perfect. He obviously saw the writing on the wall with free agency. And rather than find somebody who would have been a Bismack Biyombo, you know, placeholder type of starting center, or move, you know, maybe there were other discussions, but this seemed to be priority number one, and he could have gone and said, hey, let's talk about finding a guard instead, right? And JaVale McGee could have been the starter if we're recreating this whole universe. But instead, he said, I want one of the best offensive centers in the entire NBA. That's what I want at center on this team. That should tell us a whole heck of a lot about the confidence that Jones has in this offense. There's plenty to criticize him about when it comes to what he has and hasn't gotten done. There's only so much credit you can give for almosts and maybes and rumors and reports, but I don't feel like you can take this seriously, which I do from how many people reported it at the time, and still throw the accusation out there that James Jones doesn't know that the problem is on offense, or that he's not thinking big enough to solve that problem. What would it look like, though? What would it look like if Sabonis had been here? And what could it look like if the Suns do go more in that direction in a potential Ayton trade this month, this offseason, down the line. We'll talk about that next. First, today's show, guys, once again brought to you by LinkedIn and their awesome LinkedIn Jobs profile. As a small business owner or hiring manager, you know success in 2023 can all depend on the team members you surround yourself with, and that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. We're hiring at my institute. We've hired student workers at ASU. We've hired an administrative specialist, a whole bunch of stuff. We have the ASU resources, but LinkedIn has been indispensable as well. Finding people, we pulled someone from a law firm. That's not somebody we normally would have found, but LinkedIn helped us get there. It helped you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with their targeting tools. They also go beyond the resume data by using insights from your post, company profile, and their almost 1 billion member profiles to put your post in front of the most qualified candidates. So identify those qualified candidates on LinkedIn Jobs and do it fast and for free. Make that connection with them and use LinkedIn Jobs to screen and rate applicants based on your job qualifications, all of that on one platform. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Concrete reporting almost 1 year ago connected the Suns to Domantas Sabonis. We talked in that last segment about what that should tell us about James Jones, why he might have been more right than I realized at the time, and why I'm a little embarrassed about my take in hindsight. But setting all of the rights and wrongs and lessons and everything aside a little bit, I think it's also worth just considering what that would have looked like. And maybe the best thing to say before we get too far into any of that is to remind everybody just how good Domantas Sabonis is, okay? I mean, watch the Kings, first of all. If you're just a basketball fan, watch this team. They're really, really fun. He is more fun on this team than any of those Pacers teams. Those teams really were rough watches with the Sabonis-Turner stuff, and, you know, it was just a weird roster. They never want to bottom out. The Kings have been more willing. They have younger players. They're more willing to experiment, I would say, and he's really been unleashed. He's averaging a career high in rebounding, assists, and he's at 19 points per game, which isn't a career high, but is close. He's also at a career high in field goal percentage, three-point percentage, and he is winning games for this team. He's going to be an all-star, and I know this isn't a Kings podcast. I know I just said the Suns aren't getting him, so maybe it's all just torture to hear about at this point. I'm not positive how close the trade actually got to really happening, but I think the interest was definitely serious. If you take a player like that and you insert them into what the Suns are, it makes a ton of sense, right? From an offensive standpoint. And again, even though I feel a little bit wrong with what I said at the time, it was mostly about what Sabonis might be defensively. But I think at the same time, I was underrating what impact he could have on this offense. We've seen how quickly one of the spokes of the wheel coming off, how much damage that has done to the movement of the vehicle, the movement of the train. I mean, whatever. The Suns were a force to be reckoned with in the prior two seasons. Now it's really ugly a lot of the nights, unless Devin Booker is there or unless their shooters get really hot. Sabonis would have solved a lot of that. You know, we're having a lot of hard conversations right now, I think, as people who want to see this team succeed, that, you know, this is a roster, this is a system that was built around Devin Booker, who still is at this level, and Chris Paul being all NBA caliber offensive creators. And Paul is not that anymore, and it's gone really badly. Sabonis, if he had been in place, I think those problems go pretty easily right away. They're just gone because he is a genuine facilitator. I told you, career high in assists. I'll tell you what that number is too. 6.8, almost 7 assists per game. That would be second on the Suns off the top of my head. I mean, Paul, and then it would be Sabonis. I mean, 7 is more than Booker's ever had in a season in the competitive part of his career, for sure. So you're talking about a guy who would have solved that problem. And he also fits beautifully, okay? Because, I mean, how have the Suns used Dario Saric, Frank Kaminsky, Jock Landale in the past, right? Dribble handoffs at the top of the arc, elbow sets, facilitation from those, you know, elbow free throw line extended types of spaces on the court. Monty has, I mean, he has more sets for those than any coach has for any other scenario in the NBA. I guess maybe Steph Curry off-ball action might be number two behind Monty Williams, or number one, and Monty Williams elbow sets might be number two, but he loves that, right? There's no, it's no surprise, no coincidence that a lot of the best offensive moments for this Suns team have been when they've been able to use, when Saric was healthy, you know, last year when they were able to even use guys like Jay Crowder and stuff like that, when everyone is a threat to have the ball, move the ball, and shoot the ball, that's when the Suns are at their best. Ayton is not always a threat to do that. Obviously, there's been some times when, you know, with injuries, a lot of the players this year haven't been able to do that. But if you put Sabonis there, I mean, you know, the Suns' offense has not been too shabby at all in the past few seasons. They are right now the number 13 offense, even despite some of their recent, I mean, they've been 30th on offense the past 2 weeks, but even that only brought them down to 13th. So even when Jus Booker was healthy, even, you know, with Cam Johnson out, the Suns have been a pretty good offense. But you take that and you put Sabonis in there, you genuinely might be talking about the best offense in the entire NBA. Sacramento is fourth, and, I mean, I think they do a lot of really smart stuff. I don't mean any disparagement to any of their players, but they are starting, you know, nobody who consistently makes All-NBA teams. They have a rookie in their starting lineup, right? They don't have a consistent two-guard who's always, you know, it's not always the same player. It's not always a reliable thing. And they're fourth on offense in the league. And a lot of that is Sabonis. A lot of that is De'Aaron Fox. I don't want to take anything away from him, but you have an aging Harrison Barnes in there. Like, I'm not, you know, it sounds like I'm just picking nits and putting holes in this team. Maybe I am a little bit, but the point is, it's not as if it's the 16-17 Warriors and they're still able to be an elite offensive team with Sabonis being basically their point guard. So you throw that in to what the Suns already are, and you're talking about probably the best offense in the league, or, you know, in the mix. Okay, and so what does that tell us? I think it's reasonable to say that it shows a deeper understanding of this team and its problems than we give James Jones credit for having. All right, that's really the bottom line of bottom lines that I'm trying to get at. We watch this team, we watch how they have handled off seasons and trade deadlines in the past, and we see them move. They don't make a move for Eric Gordon. Maybe they don't push hard enough on Kevin Durant. They don't really have a backup plan after Kevin Durant. I don't know. I'm not saying they should have gone out and gotten Donovan Mitchell or whatever, but like, they didn't even add, you know, a secondary piece, you know? And you look at all that and you could easily say James Jones isn't doing enough. He doesn't know how to fix this team. He's not getting the job done. Execution, of course he hasn't. I mean, this team's in a bad spot. He didn't make any of those moves. I've been a big defender of James Jones, but at a certain point, you have to just be realistic. There has not been enough done to create backup plans for this roster. But you have to keep in mind at the same time you say that talks got far enough along only 1 year ago for a potential move that would have brought in an all-star caliber, potentially all-NBA caliber center who would have escalated the Suns' already really high ceiling to, you know, historic elite levels. It didn't happen, but that should tell you where James Jones' head is at. As we're getting ready for the trade deadline, I will be keeping this deal in mind, and if you maybe don't want to be surprised if something big happens, or you just want to be a reasonable bystander, observer of what's going on, I think you should probably keep this visit, this jump down the time machine, front of mind for yourself as well. I want to wrap up with a rumor related, again, I keep saying rumor, report related to the Suns ownership situation from Brian Windhorst today on NBA Today at ESPN. We'll dive into what he said about the three acting owners that the Suns have and what it might mean if it really changes anything next. First, today's show, guys, brought to you as well by Bet Online, your number one source for sports betting info, analysis, news, and more all year long. So get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. Whatever sport you love, whatever league you love, BetOnline will have you covered with the news and analysis, stats, even podcasts that you need to make informed bets. We have Suns Timberwolves on Friday night here. We do not have odds for that game, but we have Spurs Warriors. The Warriors are 8-point favorites on the road, which I know it's the Spurs, but the Warriors have been an awful road team. They did just lose at home a bunch, so maybe that'll flip and they'll start winning on the road too to balance it out. Who knows? That's a big line either way. Over-under is 240 for the game. That feels pretty high to me. More and more, every league, I'm sure pro football wildcard weekend, there's endless props and game lines and everything else to get in on there. Head to the website today, that's betonline.net, or use your mobile device to learn more. Bet Online, where the game starts. Brian Windhorst of ESPN on NBA Today, their NBA talk show today, in front of his just wonderful green screen background that's like a 1972 hardwood gym that looks like a PE scene from a movie from back then would be shot in, where every kid's thighs are sticking out from their school-assigned gym uniform. That's just to paint the picture for you. What he said was that he basically called it the Suns have three owners right now. And that's not necessarily super new news. He was the one who wrote the article last week or the week before that detailed some of the levers that Robert Sarver still has to pull in the power that he still has, in terms of not being the Suns, not being able to make trades that exceed $10 million, which is what Jay Crowder makes. And so Sarver effectively has veto power over really every move the Suns might make. So we knew that. But I think the thing that really jumped out to me, and the three owners for everybody who may not be familiar: Sarver, obviously, who's selling the team, suspended, but still technically the person who owns this asset. Sam Garvin, who's the interim guy, who was a minority partner in the ownership group prior to the suspension, and he was appointed to be the interim governor while Sarver served his suspension, and then ultimately after he decided to sell the team. And then Matt Ishbia, who's going to be the owner, who's submitted a bid, been approved by the team, and is being vetted, background checked by the league. All right. What Windhorst said about all of that, that again caught my attention, is that it's unlike anything he's seen in his two plus decades covering the NBA. And I have to admit that Windhorst is a person, we have the pointing memes, why would the Jazz do that after they traded Royce O'Neal? He predicted the teardown. He knows how to feed the content maw, right? He understands his job. He works at ESPN. They're in the business of turning sports news into entertainment. And so at the end of the day, between his podcasts, his appearances on TV, and all the rest, he does have to fluff it up. He knows what he's doing, but he's also a really respected reporter. I mean, he is the guy who, he's not going to be the newsbreaker like Woj. He's not going to be the analysis deep, long form essays about the sport like Zach Lowe. His lane is perspective and commentary and reporting on the really deep machinations of the sport, of the league. And so when he says stuff like this, I trust it. And the fact that he's choosing to put it out there makes me feel like it's a legitimate thing that he thinks is important for people to know. And maybe that sounds obvious, but look, I mean, you watch like First Take, Stephen A. will throw stuff out there and you never even know what the heck it might mean. Wendy doesn't do that. And again, to keep harping on it the way that he does, I'm getting worried that it matters more than I'm giving it credit for, right? Like, as soon as he, you know, he had an article out there a while ago about how the Suns might need to lower their asking price for Jay Crowder. He then had this ownership thing. And all the while, I've been on the boat of wait on Crowder until you get the deal you want. With the ownership stuff, it might be a little awkward in terms of negotiations when you have Jones needing to negotiate, but not knowing what he has approval over because he's not allowed to talk to Sarver, but Sarver eventually will need to approve it by way of Garvin and on and on. It's complicated. It's messy, but you got to do it. At the end of the day, it's your job, right? That's kind of been the mode I've been on. They have to make this trade and they still can make a good one. That's just with Crowder. Maybe there's more. We just talked about the Sabonis thing. I think in a lot of Suns fans' imaginations, the Suns think much bigger than just a straightforward Jay Crowder trade. I probably would agree with that. And that only makes it more complicated. I've been honest about all that, but I've still been optimistic that there could be a good outcome anyway. The more that Windhorst in particular and some of these other people that we've heard here and there talk about this, I have to admit it's starting to make me less optimistic about how well the Suns can do in a trade. You know, we heard Jalen McDaniels. That's been the hot name this week. Shams Charania, Jake Fisher both alluded to that the Suns are interested in him. Now, he's the Jalen. He's on the Hornets. He's not the guy on the Timberwolves that has been really impressive. So the less heralded McDaniels brother, also the older McDaniels brother, but still an interesting young player who would fit decently here. And you know, maybe that's the ultimate outcome of this because that would need to be a three-team trade. The Hornets have no reason to get Crowder. Most importantly, though, McDaniels doesn't make a lot of money. You know, he's still on a rookie contract. And so maybe that's the end result here is in order to not have to worry so much about Sarver, the Suns find a way to make a trade that cuts the salary rather than increasing the salary. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's all that they're able to do. Maybe our dreams of a Sabonis caliber trade, again, not him, he's not going anywhere, but you throw out a Siakam, you throw out whoever, OG Anunoby, I mean, those are both Raptors, whatever your favorite Suns trade is, maybe that's not real. Maybe that's just not reasonable. Maybe that is where we need to reevaluate things as we talk about this team. It's not so much about can they make a Crowder trade or not. I just still feel like it would be such an embarrassment for them to not get something done there. But maybe big trade gets put on the back burner for the summer. Crowder trade is something that cuts salary. And maybe it is a McDaniels. Maybe it is a, Jared Vanderbilt. Some of these guys that are good, very interesting players who eventually will make a lot of money, but they're young, they're cheap, and that's where they go. That's still not an easy trade to make because Jalen McDaniels is still a coveted player. Jared Vanderbilt, Lord knows, is a very coveted player. The Jazz want probably like multiple first-round picks for him. And that's still not a given. But maybe that's still nevertheless where this is headed. And I do have to admit, I'm starting to peel back from my just blind optimism. It's going to work out, yada, yada, to be honest. But more reporting to come. 3.5 weeks to go. The trade deadline is fast approaching. I know the first trade is going to happen sometime soon. We're, by the time we talk next, Brandon and I will be recording on Sunday. That day will be January 15th, which is when a lot of these wheels will start to be greased. If Ayton does come up in a conversation, if some of these other extension players, everyone in the NBA will be trade eligible at that point, and a lot more can start to happen, can be talked about. And we'll know more. In the meantime, hit subscribe, hit follow, make Locked On Suns your first listen every single day, just like you did today. And before we talk next, go make Locked On Sports Today your second listen to get caught up on everything going on around the whole world of sports. That show, available on all podcast platforms. Check it out. And I will talk to you all on Monday.